Hi, Whitney Maxey. Welcome to KBOO.
Thank you for having me.
Whitney Maxey is a community organizer in Memphis, Tennessee, with the grassroots political organization Memphis for All, that's building power of a multiracial cross-class alliance in Memphis. She's also worked all over Florida, including the Miami Workers Center, and she travels all over the South working with and conferring with groups like Durham for All in North Carolina. Whitney Maxey grew up in Tallahassee, Florida, got a basketball scholarship to Chipotle College, graduated, and worked as an engineer for 3 years. A little over 10 years ago, she changed careers, began community organizing and writing and speaking, joined the editorial collective of the webzine called Organizing Upgrade, that was in early 2020, and came to serve on the staff of Liberation Road on their National Executive Committee. I've read several of her articles on how the left must vote for Biden and defeat Trump in the far right, also strengthen the socialist wing of the anti-Trump front, also shift the national balance of forces, thicken our relationships to visionary organizations rooted in working class communities in color, I'm quoting Whitney, also engage new politicized activists, and finally come out of the 2020 election with greater cohesion and a stronger position. Whitney, first, tell us about your own personal journey from basketballer and engineer to community organizer fighting for justice and the poor.
Thank you so much, Bill. So my personal journey, like so many journeys of other people, starts before I was even thought of. So I just come from a lineage of strong Black Southern women who didn't just accept what society was trying to tell them, how they should be, who they should be. And so much of their lives were emblematic of rejecting certain norms and really kind of embracing their own ideas of femininity and what it means to have justice and what community looks like. I very much come from that, and spirit is there. And so if we kind of fast forward into my life, starting out as a basketball player, you know, you quickly learn how much you love something when you have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning to do it. And so I did not love basketball is what I'm getting at, Bill. I actually only played 1 year and wound up just focusing my education on getting an engineering degree and eventually going into the engineering field, where I just always felt there was a higher calling for me, quite frankly. You know, I didn't have an articulation from it. Growing up, I wasn't involved with or wasn't aware of, you know, any kind of explicit organizing or left politics outside of the two sentences in European history class where they talk about Karl Marx and say he was a bad, crazy man. So the global financial crisis, honestly, after being laid off as an engineer, just kind of sent me searching for what the thing was that I was feeling called to. And I mean, it's so serendipitous that I wound up at the Miami Workers Center. And so I just, through working with people on a campaign with SEIU at the time called Fight for a Fair Economy, who were just these really amazing, thoughtful, revolutionary folks who, you know, had been in movements for decades, some of them. So it was really at that point where I started to kind of sharpen my ideology and my worldview and started to learn what it meant and what it takes to organize our folks and the people that we care about.
This is Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Hour on KBOO Radio, 90.7 FM Portland. I'm talking to Whitney Maxey, a community organizer, writer in Memphis, Tennessee, and also an activist with Liberation Road. And we've been talking about her journey to socialism. So, Whitney, why did you suggest in one of your articles, as a socialist, why did you suggest we vote for Biden, but then force his administration into supporting a set of reform measures that, for one, are necessary to stop climate change and save the human experiment, and also make life much better for the poor people of Memphis and the world, and also demonstrate how we could win a much more just and democratic world. Tell us about why we vote for Biden, but then we fight him and force the the Biden administration to enact measures that would really be important and show the way to a better future?
Before I kind of talk about this moment that we find ourselves in right now leading up to this 2020 election, I want to take a step back and talk about a kind of broader context of a strategic fight. I think the understanding for me of the right, who some of us refer to as the new Confederacy, that's made up of these reactionary sectors of capital that, you know, include big oil, for an example, but are also made up these kind of really reactionary racist sectors of our country, and that is largely driven by white, downwardly mobile, disillusioned middle strata folks who have felt the brunt of neoliberalism, and the right in a broad sense has provided them a kind of ideological home and a home for their whatever kinds of agenda that different sectors of their base are trying to move and fight for. And, you know, there are plenty of fissures, contradictions within the right. For me, you know, that's our kind of most immediate strategic enemy, and Trump and Trumpism are the kind of most dangerous neo-fascist, if you will, bloc within the right who, you know, this moment is forcing lots of people to have to confront. And recognizing that, you know, there's this broader strategic fight at hand, for me and many of the people that I organize with, this is more about a tactical moment of us saying, if we sit out, if we as the left sit out, or if we play a demobilizing force in any way, then essentially what we're doing is abandoning some of our folks, right? We're abandoning plenty of Black, Brown, AAPI folks who are feeling the brunt of this pandemic, who are at the intersections of the multifold crisis of the economy, deterioration of our planet, as well as the global impacts and kind of dynamics between the likes of U.S. and China, who are, you know, in this kind of global hegemonic fight, while we're watching the political legitimacy of the U.S. both internally degrade as well as watching it degrade further on a national stage. This is all that characterizes and fits into this moment. And so part of us being in this fight is just showing up for our folks. Second, the tactical decision to vote for Biden in this election is about trying to create the most favorable conditions possible for our movement to be able to continue the kind of fights that we've been engaging in around national demands such as Medicare for All and some version of Green New Deal legislation and the BREATHE Act that was introduced by Movement for Black Lives, those types of things. So continuing to try to both build a national left progressive platform as well as putting the pieces in place to try to fight for that platform. So when the term dump Trump, fight and force Biden, within that it's the recognition that Trump and Trumpism, like those who are ideologically aligned with him, pose the biggest threat to our folks in this moment, and that a vote for Biden is not where we stop. It is just the beginning, and that beginning is about us growing our organizational and movement infrastructure from the national to the local level that coheres an array of anti-Trump, pro-democracy forces, as well as using that infrastructure to apply sustained mass pressure on Biden around, again, the social democratic, if you will, demands that have come to represent the interests of the left progressive movements.
Hi, folks. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Hour on Cable Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon, talking to Whitney Maxey, a community organizer and writer in Memphis, Tennessee, and activist with Liberation Road Socialist Organization. We've been talking about first our journey to socialism. Next, the kind of reforms we might win from a Biden administration. Whitney, you discussed how you have to show up for the people we represent in the cities that we're fighting for and that we're contributing to their own self-organization. Let's talk about the programs that you could force the Biden administration into. That, of course, assumes that the Biden administration would listen to the left, and I think they would, because the left is powerful in the party, especially at the grassroots, at the rank and file. And it also has a lot of representation of people like Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez in the Congress, and they have lots of support from others. Biden administration has to deal with us. And there are signs of that, actually, in their climate action plan, which I went through, which talked about some fairly radical policies. What issues would you bring into your local organizing? You mentioned health care for all, a single-payer system. How would you organize for them in a way such that people also see the possibilities of real democracy, of working-class people actually asserting their power and exercising it in ways that actually make this a society very, very different in terms of the way people interact far more democratically with everybody making part of the decisions that shape their own lives? Tell us about that.
Yeah, I think the first thing I want to say is I completely agree that Biden has shown that he's susceptible to pressure from not only left and progressive movements, but also the burgeoning left progressive governing bloc that you just referenced with the AOCs or the squad. I would even include Elizabeth Warren within that unity task force that they came up with to kind of name what the platform would be for essentially the corporate Dems who are currently in control of the party. Our ability to do that and even Biden to feel the need to even bring those folks to the table is a shift, right? That's a notable shift in terms of our relative influence and like the need to have to respond to us. Now, Biden is also susceptible to the right, so I don't want to paint a one-sided picture. He is a site of struggle for certain ideas and views. But in terms of the kind of national demands that could be localized, I feel less clear, honestly, about Medicare for All and what that could maybe look like in the context of Memphis and the state of Tennessee than I've just thought a little more about Green New Deal legislation, which I think, you know, on the national level, there's certainly some work for the left and progressive movements to do to have a unifying Green New Deal framework and narrative, because currently there are different versions of the original resolution that was presented by AOC and some others. So, yeah, I think there's a need to truly have something that everybody can get aligned around. But when I think about what Green New Deal-inspired legislation could look like in the state of Tennessee, and perhaps Memphis in particular, in Tennessee, they're the largest publicly owned, as in government-run, energy company called Tennessee Valley Authority. And currently, the spike that's been shaping up where the private sector under neoliberalism has tried to chip away at TVA's programs and its ability to sustain itself. And that's not to say that TVA was some perfect entity even when it was created, but it is to say it was one of the better things that we had out there in terms of trying to address issue of energy access and energy democracy. And so one of the more recent fights that have started to take place are some of the local energy companies in different cities across Tennessee are thinking about leaving TVA and potentially going into the private market to get energy, which takes away some of the accountability, takes away some of the potential for people to have more say over what's happening with their access to power, power in terms of energy power, but also political power. For me, that's one of the fights that when I look at different places around the South and trying to think how could this national general framework of a Green New Deal, regardless of what version you're talking about, you know, what are some ways to try to think about it locally that impact who has jobs and what kind of jobs, which obviously the race through which we want to be looking at and fighting for jobs within. There's the question about who's able to make decisions about TVA and the kinds of services it offers. And, you know, in a place like Tennessee where you have the largest amount of the black population is in the western part of the state, there's a real question about what energy democracy look like for us in relationship to the rest of Tennessee, and then also all of the rural communities here that are also constantly fighting for access to energy, but also other services that are largely being stripped away from them over time as, you know, we become a more and more urbanized society. So that's an example of the kind of, I think, national legislation that could be localized and connected to a much bigger thing for people here on the ground.
How do we build that one great movement that the Wobblies so heroically fought for in the early part of the century? Give us your thoughts.
Yeah, so I think for the left, this is the perennial question, particularly in the United States. And so I don't have the answer for it, but there are certainly some things that I've learned and observed along the way about some of the things that we would need. So one would be a kind of united front that's much broader than anything that currently exists, and that includes different parts of society that are engaged in some form of movement against austerity and or against white supremacy and or against any kind of cis-hetero patriarchy. And then our movement would need to be non-sectarian, and non-sectarian in the sense of it being able to hold conflicting and sometimes contradictory views and dynamics, but the kind of glue for the movement would be brought into a unified goal and vision that allows us to name what is necessary for us to have alignment on, and therefore the things that we should prioritize versus the things where it's important for us to have alignment on, but it doesn't make or break our ability to actually achieve our goals and vision. And then perhaps the last thing is that, you know, it has to have a decades-long strategy with a clearly defined and agreed upon enemy in which we need to defeat, which again, I and folks that I organize with in this moment largely think of the new Confederacy as that enemy that we should have this multi-decade strategy around. And then the last thing is obviously national movement infrastructure that can hold these broader array of forces that would need to make up this united front against the new Confederacy.
Whitney Maxey, thanks a lot for talking to us today.
Thank you so much, Bill, for the invitation.
Keep up the good work.